Welcome to the Institute Journal's Sergeant's Time podcast, featuring informal conversations with leaders at all levels, where you'll have the unique chance to learn what makes them tick, what their leadership styles are, and what inspires them. I'm your host, Staff Sergeant Brandon Cox, NCOIC of the Institute Journal. With us, Chaga Zapata, the managing editor of the Institute Journal. Today, we welcome Command Sergeant Major Raymond S. Harris. Command Sergeant Major Harris assumed responsibilities as the Command Sergeant Major of the U.S. Army Training and Doctrine Command at Fort Eustis, Virginia, on September 29, 2023. He enlisted in the United States Army on March 20, 1996, as an infantryman. He has served in various roles, including rifleman, machine gunner, and every enlisted leadership position up to TRADOC Command Sergeant Major. His distinguished career has seen duty assignments across the globe and multiple deployments in support of operations in Kosovo, Cuba, Afghanistan, Iraq, and rotations to Europe as the 5th Corps Sergeant Major. Sergeant Major Harris, it's an honor to have you on the show today. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is awesome. Super excited to be here and just to talk, right? Just to kind of give get some of this stuff out of my brain and make sure I share it with the collective group of the Army that just, why hold it in?
Yeah, absolutely. I know we're all super excited to have you on the show. If we could, maybe just the broader Army audience may not know Sergeant Major Harris as a person. So kind of give them that, a little bit of that information. I want to talk a little bit about your past. So our first question is kind of, you know, where did you grow up and what was life like there?
Sure, yeah. I grew up in South Jersey, right? And so if you're from New Jersey or anywhere in the tri-state area, you know, there's two parts of New Jersey. It's either North Jersey or South Jersey. And so you'll almost always hear somebody from New Jersey call it where they're from. And so grew up in South Jersey, a little town called Washington Township, right near Deptford type area. Grew up there my whole life. My family, my mom and my dad are from New York and Washington, D.C., respectively. Met in Philadelphia, had my sister and myself, and then moved to New Jersey shortly after I was born. And so grew up there my whole life. It was always unique. My mom, she was a teacher. She was a church teacher for 35 years, so I could never get away with anything. And so I always had some kind of supervision, not just parental supervision, right, but mm-hmm. developmental growth supervision over me. So did that, and just, I tell you, always wanted to be part of the Army or something that just had a bigger purpose. I just felt that, whether that was a sports team, whether that was doing something, never just wanted to be the person sitting around not doing anything, right? Like right. Just always had that feeling that not that I was meant to do something different, but I needed to do something different to fulfill me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. If you talk a little bit about what did lead you to join the Army, what made you choose to become an infantryman?
Yeah, I think it was always, you know, in the backwoods. And so my parents divorced when I was about 3 years old. And so, you know, having the two households really close, but they all kind of lived kind of near the woods. And so that was kind of helpful for me, right? So I was always in the woods. I was always kind of crawling around and, you know, looking at how do I like to hunt. So, you know, trying to figure those things out. And I was like, you know what? I did this. My uncle was a Marine Corps. He was a scout sniper. And so, you know, he did a lot of things. So I gleaned a lot of things from him. Nobody in my direct family, mother, father, were in the military. But, you know, you watch the war movies and it just got me excited. Because, again, when I talked about a purpose, what is something that I want to do, right? And it was very patriotic at the time, you know, and all these things, you know, to kind of get after that. And then so I decided to do that. I went to college and I was wasting my mom's money. And that's when it really clicked on me. I mean, I went to a college by the beach, right? So let's face it, I was never in college. I was always at the beach. I was partying. I was not doing a lot of good things with my life at the time, probably. And so I was wasting my mom's money. And that's when it really hit me. Said, I got to make a change. I got to get back to my core purpose or where I think my purpose is. And that's what drove me to join the military, like physically join the military, go to a recruiting station and do it. And then again, they showed me the videos of here's what you can do, here's what you scored, and I saw that infantry stuff, and I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to blow stuff up. I want to shoot things. I want to do everything that video just showed, jump out of planes, you know, and here I am 28 years later.
I can't help but to ask, but what is your favorite war movie then?
Oh, that's a tough one. So probably a couple for a couple different reasons, right? I mean, and some are theatrical, right? And so, you know, you take Platoon, which is just – it's just a classic movie. Apocalypse Now, a classic war movie, right? And it's just unrealistic, both of them, I think, of how we do things, right? But it's just something. And I don't know, that's a tough one. I'd probably say one of my most favorite ones as close to what we do or what hits me in the feels of what we do and the experiences that we've been through as combat is probably Saving Private Ryan, just for the fact that it was a collective group coming together to deliver a message and help save somebody, right? And that's kind of what we do in the Army, right? And when you're in that and you get that close-knit thing, you get the feels, you get the camaraderie, and it's everybody's working towards one sense of purpose, one mission. And I think that kind of hits probably some good feels of what we do.
It's so visceral at the beginning, too. For me, as a Marine, I had a physical reaction when that was happening, when I was watching that. It was the most intense movie I've ever seen. It's amazing. So I'm right there with you, Sergeant Major.
Sergeant Major, can you tell us maybe a story about your younger self, a group of individuals that you really mesh with and learned a lot of formative experiences with, or just a leader that inspired you?
Yeah, I've had a good couple leaders, as you can imagine. And I will tell you, though, probably the most impactful leader I've ever had in my career, his name was Staff Sergeant Henry. And I will always call him Staff Sergeant Henry and not by his first name, because I just have so much admiration and respect for him. Came out of OSIT training, had a Fort Benning at the time. You know, again, kid from South Jersey, about to head out to Fort Riley, Kansas, my first duty assignment, right? And I'm like, okay, I'm a pretty smart kid. Again, I told you, my mom was a teacher, so I know what the states are in the United States, but I did not know where Kansas was, right? And I'm like, okay, this Kansas, great, but where is it? So we start heading out there with one of my bad buddies, one of my one of the soldiers I went to training with. We both went out there. He lived about 30 minutes from where I did, so we just carpooled out to Kansas. Coming through the gate of Fort Riley, Kansas, doing a random inspection, and I happened to have some things I shouldn't have had in my car going on to a military installation. Really, it was like fireworks, an illegal knife, right? You know, stupid stuff. Irregardless, not authorized to be on the installation, so I got arrested right then and there. And so, you know, the MPs pulled me out and put me to the little holding cell that they had there on Fort Riley at the time. And, you know, they called my first sergeant, and my first sergeant, you know, said, "Harris, welcome to the unit. You're staying right there till Monday, and somebody will come and get you." And I was like, well, wow, what an introduction to United States Army, right? I'm like, oh, my goodness. But it was, hey, standards and discipline, right? They held the standard regardless of my status, and they said, this is what's happening. And it was a great life lesson. I mean, it was a great learning. You know, it's probably one of many learning lessons that I've had in my career. But Staff Sergeant Henry is the one that came and got me on Monday morning. And he said, "All right, Private, you messed up. You know that." You know, he probably said a lot more other colorful words, right, of points of emphasis, not directed at me, but points of emphasis, right? And he's like, "But we're going to take care of you," right? And what it showed me was that, you know, as new soldiers come in the Army, they're going to make mistakes. And you can't beat them up for it because they just don't know. Right. I didn't know how to enter a military installation like that because I never had to before. The first time I went to a military installation was in a bus with like 100 other people, and you got off and went to a reception center and started training. Mm-hmm. This is the first time I'd PCS, the first time of having to get onto a military installation, you know. So it was different. But he showed me compassion, right? He showed me empathy. He showed me firm and fair leadership. And so he is one that I've emulated a lot of my leadership style off of. But again, care, compassion, held a standard, and I learned. Yeah, Sergeant Major or Staff Sergeant Henry was, man, what a great man in my life that I thought, you know, just truly inspired me, and I just wanted to emulate his kind of care for soldiers.
Is Sergeant Henry still around? Do you keep in contact with him?
I don't. We've lost contact over the years, but I mean, I was 27 years ago, you know, when that happened, and, you know, he's moved on and done different things. And so I wish I had, you know, if there's a regret that I have, you know, or something I would have liked to have done differently, maybe not a regret, probably get in contact with him a little bit more.
I think those are the most important things. I'm sure that you were that for a lot of people, if I had to guess. Well, Sergeant Major, thank you for sharing about yourself. I think this is the time now we shift gears a little bit, and we'll talk about some of your initiatives that you're working on in your current role at TRADOC. One of your priorities is holistic health and fitness program. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, H2F1, not a super new program that's been in the Army. We've been doing a lot. We are really taking a look at the return of investment of the program. You know, that's resources, dollars spent into it, personnel we put against it to make sure we're getting the outcome that we want based off all these resources we're putting to get after holistically healthy soldiers in all five domains. Truly believe that H2F is a game changer to ensuring that our soldiers are ready for combat. If you can't balance those five domains, and you may have one of the domains gets out of whack, you know, every once in a while, you know, Your emotional domain might be in a bad place, but if your other four domains are good, then they'll kind of pick up the slack for one of those domains that you might be down in. But in order to do that, you have to understand the holistic picture of it, right, of how you kind of navigate through that space. And so, you know, what we're trying to do now, what we're trying to do, we were directed for all the right reasons. The Chief of Staff of the Army, we're going to accelerate pushing H2F out to the force. So I believe it's by the end of FY27, we'll have about 111 H2F teams out there. We've also right-sized them to about 22 people per team. So every element that gets a H2F team will be a 22-person team. Before, they were scaled with large, medium, and small-size brigade-type elements. So anywhere from 30-something to 20-something to 18-something you'd have, depending on the size. Now everybody gets 22. That's like trainers, that's dietitians, it's nutritionists. Some behavioral health officers, you know, those things that really round out all of the dimensions of strength to really kind of line that out for the H2F team. So we're compiling the data now, again, as I talked about, for the ROI, the returns on investment, just so we can provide that back to the vice chief of staff in monthly updates that we do with him to make sure that we're on track to deliver what we say we're going to deliver. And so I think this is a game changer. We have a lot of successful organizations when they embrace, commit, and there's a lot of leadership emphasis on H2F. You can see the reduction in musculoskeletal injuries. You can see the reduction in folks, you know, seeking behavioral health because they know they have the support. One, the command supports it. Two, the access is there, a lot easier to get to. And then we help them. You know, hopefully we get to see when we see this ROI come back is that we're going to see a reduction in body fat composition. We're going to see an increase in ACFT performance, right? That's what all these things kind of come to also. And that's kind of what we look at for returns on investment. So we're in a really good space with it. We're expanding it. And we do an H2F symposium every year. And, you know, almost everybody's invited to come. It's down at Fort Eustis, Virginia. And it's a great event. Last year we had over 1,200 people come to it, and they got industry that's coming in as we talk about how to get after these domains of strength. So
I know it's something that we've published several articles on it. Matter of fact, we had a Singaporean sergeant major who went back to, after finishing the academy, he went back to Singapore with that program, pretty much a little bundle in his hand that he's taken to incorporate into his country. It was amazing. So it's a significant program, but what message do you have about that program to the young NCOs or to the NCOs out there?
Yeah, I'd start off with saying they need to fully understand the program, not just, you know, what somebody's telling or what they read off of a blog, or they read off X post, or they read off, you know, whatever. Go to the regulation, you know, read it. Even if you skim through it, we have all sorts of different sizes of how to explain H2F, but truly understand the program, the why, the purpose behind it. And then embrace it and put it in your system. You know, your training management, that should be what guides your physical performance every day when you do your PT sessions. That should help guide how you lead and care for your soldiers, because all those principles are still in there because they fit within the Army profession, just in a different way to take a look at it. So I would say understand, embrace, and execute. And I think you will have a unit and an organization that's ready to go anytime you need it to.
I did have some personal experience with H2F. I was at Fort Drum as my last assignment, and we were one of the first to get the H2F team at a brigade level. I didn't understand what it was at first, but once I did, it was an excellent resource for soldiers to use. They could go right after formation of at PT and just go talk to somebody like a dietitian or the sports medicine guys, and kind of get some feedback on issues that they have. And I thought that was excellent. How do you think the H2F program fits your vision for preparing soldiers for the demands of modern warfare?
Yeah, I appreciate, because that rolled actually right into what I was going to caveat on something too, is that you guys interviewed DeSoy Buell, Drill Sergeant of the Year for TRADOC Buell, mm-hmm. Ashley Buell. She is really the end state of what a H2F team can do for you. You've seen it. She's about 5'5", maybe 90 pounds, going after be the TRADOC Drill Sergeant of the Year. Mm-hmm. And all the drill sergeants that competed were physically fit, to include her, all of them. But what she was able to do was she was able to harness the power of the H2F team of Fort Jackson, South Carolina, and use every ounce of leverage that they were able to provide to help her stay healthy, stay fit, to not have injuries, all these things. So her body was fueled 24/7 on how to get after it. And she won to become the TRADOC Drill Sergeant of the Year. That's what an H2F team can do for you. Mm-hmm. And so if you demass that one person, that one example – against, you know, the 1 million people we have in the total Army, I mean, come on. You could see the results would be enormous. And then how could you refute the positivity of that program? To get her, who was, you know, and they've walked a lot of miles, they did a lot of physical events in the heat, exerting themselves. Wow, I mean, what a great story and example to say that this is the power of what this program can do for you. And that was just an individual person. If a leader took onus and really committed to the program and took ownership of it and said, now this is what I could do for my fire team. This is what I could get my squad to do. This is what I could get my platoon to do. You know, and then you keep going, so on and so forth, and it just automatically proliferates into, well, our brigade is, you know, super healthy. Nobody's hurt. Everybody's fit. We're ready for war, right? I mean, it magically just happens. Poof, there you go, right? But you got to embrace it, and you got to commit to it.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest shocks I had was when I learned that our H2F director, actually her previous job just used to be training Olympic athletes, and I was like, well, that's cool. You know what I mean? Like, if we could get that kind of training to all of our soldiers, that just it just shows the true expertise and professionalism that the Army's trying to provide our soldiers and get them healthy. So I think it's a great program. As you were talking about Drill Sergeant Ashley Buell, you know, TRADOC runs the Drill Sergeant Academy, and you were a drill sergeant. Can you tell us a little bit about your time as a drill sergeant?
I tell you, being a drill sergeant was probably one of my most favorite jobs I ever had in the Army. That was maybe a defining point for me in the military as a leader. And I say it in multiple different ways. So, I don't know, the numbers are probably wrong now, but, you know, back in the day, it takes 3 to 5 years to finally commit to something, right? Because you finally are imbued with everything that they're doing. You finally believe in what's going on and so forth. It probably took me a little bit longer. I was committed to what I was doing. Don't know if I was totally committed to the Army at the time. And it, not because the Army was a bad institution. It was just because I just didn't know if I was committed like that or not, if I wanted to stay in longer or not and make this a career. But going to be a drill sergeant, it really taught me a lot about individual influence and motivation because everybody's different. And so you're a senior drill sergeant in a platoon of you know, 65 young Americans trying to be, you know, working to be soldiers. Everybody gets influenced differently. Mm-hmm. And so you can't have the one-stop shop of here's my one way I'm going to influence 65 people. Or if you're the first sergeant, 260-some, that's, you know, in the company as a whole. So you really get to learn a lot about how an individual person thinks, acts, ticks, those things to do to positively influence them to do the right thing. So they now become intrinsically motivated, right, just to serve, to do their job. And I don't know if I was that great at some other things that I thought I may have been as a you know, as an NCO. So I went as a staff sergeant, mate sergeant, first class there. But I learned a lot about time management. I learned a lot about resource management. I learned a lot about unit training management. And I learned how to be an expert at skill level 10 training, meaning that I can train expertly anybody at skill level 10 task. And so, you know, the drill sergeant program is just that. We are making even more – one, we're validating that that NCO is an NCO at the level we need them to be at. And then two, we're making expert NCOs that are going to go back to the operational army and go lead. I would argue that there is no more competent NCO to train skill level tasks in a team and a squad than a drill sergeant because they do it all the time. Mm-hmm. Every 10 weeks for 10 weeks straight, they are training skill level 10 tasks, you know, to civilians becoming soldiers, our trainees to soldiers. And so their proficiency is super, super high. Fort Jackson, South Carolina really started about 2016, so almost about 8 years ago. They started a thing called the Forge. Now it's at the Forge 2.5 that General Kelly and Sergeant Major Oaks have really morphed into a phenomenal thing. And so what that is the FTXs, the three FTXs they do in basic combat training are now the Hammer, the Anvil, and the Forge. Each one of those is also not as only for the trainees to learn skill level 10, it is a developmental leadership training task for the drill sergeants. So they have to do their MDMP planning. They have to do their mission outbriefs. They have to battle track analog and digital while out in the field. And they're leading those squads as the squad leader. So they're no longer the drill sergeant just sitting on the side yelling, you know, not yelling, but, you know, motivating soldiers, say, why did you do this wrong? Oh, if they did it wrong, it's because you did it wrong, sergeant, because you're leading them. So multiple things that that does is that keeps that drill sergeant relevant. Right, that they can go lead, not just sit from the sideline and kind of tell you how to do a task. Now they have to lead you through the task. Two, again, it keeps them relevant on the MDMP, the battle tracking, unit training management, all those things that we ask our leaders to do now. And then three, it shows those trainees, those soldiers, what a squad leader should be. So they should expect that when they get to their first unit of assignment about my squad leader should be able to do this and that for me. They should be able to lead me through this. I trust in them to do this. And so now we're not hitting this. It was a weird pause, right, where you had this very overly instructive thing, and then we sent you out to an operational unit where you probably didn't have that much oversight anymore because that's just not what you do, right? The drill sergeant's there all the time for you. They're going to make sure you're at the right place, right time, right uniform, doing what you got to do. Yep. Your squad leader is going to say when an operational unit said, you better be here by this time, Any other questions? We'll see you in the morning, right? Mm-hmm. And that's how it goes. But it's called adulting, right? That's what we have to do. And so, but this also now allows us to say, okay, I should expect these kind of leadership qualities from my squad leader when I got there, because my drill sergeant is both my instructor, but now he's also my coach and mentor. And that's, these are the things I should do. So we've done that. We've changed how we train in the Drill Sergeant Academy a lot. And so, you know, we've developed a class called Talk Like a Leader. I mean, really Rare did that for us. And so a lot of different ways that we're developing leadership now. Again, I mean, TRADOC, that's one of our core tenets, is leader development and education, right? And so we have to be able to build that in our functional courses too, like drill sergeant school and these things. So I would tell you, being a drill sergeant, I wouldn't have changed that for a day in the world of my Army career, because I really think that defined how I came. And to that point, is I think that's when I really committed to the Army, because I was coming off the trail and I was right about 10 years and it said, hey, time to go in def. Right. And not saying that in def put me over that. We don't call it in def anymore. Right. Career status. And but anyway, I was just like, you know what? Based off this assignment and what I'm about to go do next, this is exactly what I want to do for the next 20 years. Yeah. And so, again, almost 29 years later, here I am. Right. And so, but I think everybody's got to get that defining moment. I tell my kids that all the time. My kid's an ROTC student at Embry-Riddle up in Prescott, Arizona. And I say, kid, you got to find your defining moment. It's going to come. And once you do it, just embrace it and commit to it and just roll out. I mean, you know, kind of like Optimus Prime. I'm not a Transformer guy, but you just got to roll out with it, right? Own it and just be happy. But I mean, I love being a drill sergeant. I would implore that everybody should go be a drill sergeant. If I was king for a day, I think it would be something that everybody should have to do just based off the skills you learn alone. It's just amazing.
Yeah. And speaking of, you know, shaping the NCO Corps, like you're talking about, you know, them getting that experience. Let's talk about some of the larger Army-wide initiatives. I think that the Sergeant Major of the Army is really prioritizing. One of the key aspects that he talks about is the new Army-wide Blue Book initiative. I was wondering how you see that shaping the NCO Corps.
Right here. So I brought this. This is like the final edit cut draft right here. So, one, because he's here, I got to give it to him. but I tell you, the Blue Book was something that you know, the SMA and the senior NCOs and really the chief of staff of the Army, too, wanted to do to really kind of bring everybody back to the purpose of why we exist in the Army. And so this Blue Book truly gets after that. The Blue Book is about defining the purpose, the why we serve. You know, we've maybe had one regulation that talked about the Constitution of the United States and what ratified the United States Army. So we talk about that in here. We talk about what does it mean to be a soldier. We talk about the Army profession. We're not talking about unit-level stuff, right? This is about getting to the fields of purpose, of service, and what it means to be a soldier, why we were created as an Army. And so we really wanted just to reground everybody to what it means to be a soldier and why we serve. And that's kind of what this does. We will talk about some standards in here, kind of the most violent, you know, the ones that we find that get violated the most. But that's just as a quick reference. And that'll be somewhere in the back of the book as an appendix as part of that. And so you get through this, you kind of read it, and I'll let you guys take a look at it. But I will tell you, with that, you know, we just didn't build this in a vacuum either. So we sent teams out and we sent them to a lot of major divisions and installations and got feedback from soldiers, sergeant majors, every cohort, officers to say, hey, how is this looking? Do you think this will work? You know, is this in the wheelhouse of something that if you had this as part of your book, this would have an impact? And emphatically, everybody came back and said this would be the great thing. And so what this also is, and I probably should have said this up front, is this is the first three chapters of everybody's standards book. And so this is not meant to be yet another book you carry in your pocket. It's when I'm at a division, a corps, a brigade, and I make my own standards book, first three chapters are this book right here. And then you put all your stuff behind it. And so now you have the one book of what you're looking at of standards or discipline, excuse me, that the organization is using. So, you know, as you look through it, again, talks Army history. Right, it talks those kind of things about the regrounding of service, and I think it'll be impactful for soldiers. I think it'll be impactful for leaders to do that, because there's nothing in there that a leader should not practice and imbue on their people all day, every day. We talk about trust. We talk about competence. We talk about expertise. You know, we talk about building cohesive teams. We talk about competence, right? We talk these things. And so everything in here should be in the leader's wheelhouse. And it also says, hey, I told you, this is what we got to be doing, right? And so I think it'll be overly helpful. You know, but again, it's only as good as people that use it. It's only going to be as good as those that put this in their kit box and say, hey, listen, this is the real deal. I mean, back in the day, you used to know, I mean, it was an inspectable item, those kind of things, you know, and it was at your, you know, first morning formations as, you know, you're getting inspected for shiny boots and this and that. And you always wanted to have all your stuff because hopefully that was the day you got the day off, right? Because you did well at your inspection formation. So.
Is there a timeline on the rollout for this book?
Yeah, so AUSA, we're going to roll the book out.
Okay.
So I think it's going to be October 15th. I'm going to talk about this at AUSA in a bigger fashion. We'll have a bunch of books printed off. But one of the intents is to not have this printed, right? It's kind of – it'll be in a digital version also.
Okay.
And so parallel to building this book, we're building a website that's going to go with it or kind of a web application that'll go with it. So you could download the web application to your phone, and in that web application, it'll have a bunch of other things you can get to that will help a leader, help a soldier, kind of a one-stop shop for finding the right answers. One of the things we found was, you know, when we Google for answers, and I said Google for a reason, when we Google for answers, you know, because of the algorithm in there, it goes for the first thing that's searched or the most searched thing for, say, AR-670-1. But that could have been you know, AR-670-1 that was – signed in 2009 vice the one that, you know, was signed in 2020. And so this will have direct links. Even in this book right here, the digital version will have hyperlinks to everything, every .mil or .gov website that's referenced in here. So Constitution will be highlighted. You could hit it, take you to the .gov site. You know, if we talk about a standard of appearance with mustache or ear headphones and PT, you click that, it's going to take it right to DAPAM 670-1. Off the Army Publishing Directorate website. So the digital version will be interactive to be able to take you right to this resource that's approved and is the most current. So you have the right answer for what you're looking at or looking for. And so we'll have the web application, and I'll demo that again on October 15th. I believe it's the day to the 15th or 16th of October at AUSA. And then we're going to launch kind of the first beta version of the website. And we'll have a function in there to give us feedback because we know it's not going to be 100% right. Of what the website web application will look like, right? And so, you know, as we go through, we'll look for constructive feedback, and then we'll make changes to how that goes.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I mean, this is my first time hearing about it, but, you know, having links to everything, I mean, everybody's on the internet now. Everybody's on social media. That's the way that they get their content. So getting junior soldiers this information that's relevant and they need to know it, and then having all of the available resources for them to look at it, you know, get them into regs and doctrine early, I think that's a phenomenal idea.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. And I think it's going to be a game changer. I mean, I really do. I mean, it is. It's awesome, right? And because it is, it brings us into a different age, right? Again, I don't know the last time I've had a printed manual on my desk anyway, right? And so generally I go down and I just download everything to PDF on my phone, and then I just go back and I have my repository, you know, and I because I can still search it. But now this will take it to the exact paragraph that talks about, you know, whatever it is that you're looking for.
If you were to filter everything to one small thing, what would you say the most important thing about this blue book is?
I would say commit to the profession. Mm-hmm. Commit to the profession. I think the sooner you can commit to the profession, like I kind of talked about, you know, it took a while for me to do it, the easier or the more at ease you'll be. And I think the Army will be that much easier for you if you just commit to the profession. Right, because it's a different lifestyle, you know, what we do and how, you know, the things that we ask our soldiers to do. But again, just accept it. You joined it. And even if you can commit to the profession and not do 30 years. You could commit to the profession and do, you know, whatever is your first or second enlistment is and then leave. And that's 1,000% okay. Matter of fact, thanks, right? Because at least you did what we needed you to do, and that's serve your country. And nobody can beat you up for that, even if you leave after 3 years of serving in the Army. You did three more years than, you know, 99% of the country won't do, you know. And so I just think it is a phenomenal thing. And I would just say commit to the profession early. As soon as you do that, boy, it's like your eyes just become wide open. Your brain's like, oh, well, this Army's easy. You know, I got this. This is nothing. And then you can have fun with it. Like I have fun every day. Everybody always asks me, you know, Sergeant Major, you know, what's it like at TRADOC? I said, my days are great every day. And I can honestly say that because, one, TRADOC just has so much impact on the Army with everything that goes on. And so being able to be part of that is just it's awesome. It's never lost on me on where I'm sitting and, you know, the things that I've done in my career that it's just I'm going to say in all, but every day you wake up and you're like, oh, this is still real. Like, yeah. That's just how I work. That's how some people may not think like that, but I do. It, like, it's not lost on me that I'm a Sergeant Major in the United States Army, that I've been doing this for almost 29 years, and I'm the TRADOC Sergeant Major. I'm like, I don't know. Somebody messed up. but you know, it's awesome. And I have fun every day, and I love leading soldiers and just talking. So, you know, with the SMA giving me this to do, it was right up my alley just to be able to get back to, you said, let's get back to the heart of what it means to be a soldier. And not heart as in core, but heart as in the feels of what it means and the purpose to be a soldier.
You remind me of somebody when I was a young in the service back in 89, I met this master sergeant, Top. We called him Top. And I would ask him every morning, morning, Top, how you doing? And he would tell me, I'm doing amazing. Every day's a holiday. Every meal's a feast. Every formation's a parade. Every paycheck is a fortune. I love it. And that was his everyday answer to everything. You remind me very much of him. So it's a pleasure to see that, Sergeant Major.
Hey, I tell my boss every day, I said, my class overruns with optimism every day. I learned a long time ago, stop worrying about stuff you can't control. And when you focus on all those kind of things that they're just out of your control and this, boy, you just makes it for such a bad day. And who wakes up and says, I want to have a bad day? Like, so I tried my hardest and refused to have bad days because there's positive in everything we do. Even if it doesn't go the right way, there's still a positive in it. You just know not to do it that way again, right? I mean, so you're still learning. And plus it makes everybody else around you better just by being positive. All right. Nobody wants to come to an office space and everybody's down and gloomy and this and that. I mean, how fun is that? Not fun at all. You know what I mean? And so I like to joke around and have fun too. So hopefully my team and I, we like to have a good time.
Well, that kind of begs the question. What do you like to do on your off time? Just out of curiosity here.
Yeah. Awesome. I love to golf. I golf and I do a lot of woodworking. So my dad, I've probably been doing construction since I was about 10 years old. Never got paid for it because that'd be illegal. That's a joke. But I did. So he had his own – he was an architect for the state of New Jersey, but he had his own little construction business. So I'd go to help him. We'd build ponds, build houses, redo kitchens, you know, you name it, we did it. So I just got into woodworking and doing those kind of construction things. And so I still do them to this day, only for my own house, right? And then golf, you know, so my son – started getting into golf a couple years back, and now he's pretty decent. My daughter's doing it now. She just joined her high school golf team. And so, you know, kind of getting out there and playing again. I've been playing golf since I was probably 9 years old. My grandfather taught me how to play, so I've been playing forever. It's just a fun thing to go do. And so I really do those. I hunt and fish. Haven't done a lot of hunting and fishing lately just because, I'm super, super busy. But that's a bad excuse also. So I got to make sure I make that time. That's part of it too, is even as a leader, you got to make time for yourself because you got to be able to decompress also because you're switched on 24/7. You got to be able to find those times. It's like, that's like your valve release sometimes to do things. And so I got to do better at my own personal time too, to take some time, to spend more time with my family, you know, to go out and do the things that we do together as a family, whether that's fishing, hunting, going to a movie, just going out to dinner, doing those things. And I've gotten better over the years. Again, the jobs, as I increased in responsibilities, has allowed me to be able to do that a little bit more than others. But yeah, that's how I like to spend my time.
I guess going back a little bit, it's clear that a lot of these initiatives, you know, like the Blue Book, stewardship to the profession, and all that stuff, they're going to make a big difference. I just want to move on to a little bit more of your general, like, leadership insights. You know, you've got a lot of experience. It's invaluable. In a lot of places, you've held a lot of awesome positions. What do you believe are the most important traits for a junior NCO to develop in order to be an effective leader?
Yeah. One, I think for a junior NCO to be an effective leader, they got to be an expert at what they're doing. So they got to really root themselves in some self-development, right? So we have three domains of development: institutional, operational, and self. They really got to do some self-development on their own to make sure that they're an expert in their field and their craft or whatever it is that they're doing. Two, I think they got to be observant. And what I mean by observant is you got to observe others and how they lead and kind of pick and choose what you think your leadership style is going to be. And that's in your formative years, and that probably starts at the specialist level, right? As you start seeing all these other different leaders and seeing who you want to emulate or not emulate, you know, these things, you got to start picking these things up and saying, okay, these are the good things, the bad things that I want to be as a leader. So you got to be open. You got to watch. you got to have empathy. I think you really – it took me a long – I used to be a very non-empathetic leader. Like, if you had an issue, I didn't care. Didn't want to hear it. I just wanted to make sure you get out to the field and we're going to do, you know, X, you know, to get after our war-fighting mission. I've obviously since learned over multiple years, decades – good Lord, decades that, you know, empathy matters. Because my experiences and how I've handled things are not how you all are going to handle things or the experiences you may have had. And so we got to recognize, even at the young junior level – of being a non-commissioned officer, that if that soldier comes to you with an issue, it's probably the biggest problem in their life at that time, and you cannot dismiss it. So you have to show a little bit of empathy and understanding and actually listen to the soldier and get them the help, the, you know, at least point them in the right direction or take them to where they need to go to. Got to have humility, right? The A++ per people are going to be very confident in what they do. But you also got to have that level of humility to say others may not. And my expectation from an A++ person that's a leader in the United States Army or just a soldier, period, is going to take that person that's that might be like the B+, and I'm going to make that person an A+. That's the sense of a leader to me that says, I'm not better than you. Okay, if you can't run as fast as me, well, then figure it out. I'm going to slow down a little bit and make sure that I bring you with me, and then together we're going to be back up to the A++ level together, right? I mean, that's what leadership does. And so I'd say, you know, those are some of the things they need to look at the end of the day. If NCOs are empowered, and more importantly, they feel empowered because their leadership is showing them that they have their back when they make a decision to make a, you know, an on the spot, the correction or lead their soldiers in a certain way. And they become experts in their field at their grade plate. I don't need to be a sergeant to be an expert staff sergeant. I need a sergeant to be an expert sergeant. Doesn't matter their CMF, just be an expert in whatever your job is and your leadership level, and we'll be okay. We'll train you and educate you in the institution and then reinforce, validate, and certify in the operational army at the echelon, you know, that you serve at. Our leaders will be okay. But part of it is a journey on themselves. You know, as a leader, it's a journey too to figure out the type of leader you're going to be. Nobody has the blueprint of what it's like to be, you know, the perfect leader, because personality matters, right? All those human intelligence, all those other things matter to how you're going to be a leader. How you grew up before you came in the Army matters. It'll probably help, you know, could guide you at least on your initial path of how you are as a leader. And so, you know, how do you take that personal journey to figure out your leadership style also? Because you're going to have enough positive influences in your career and in your life. And so I'm going to say this, my team's going to may laugh at me or not laugh at me when they hear this. I was here probably about 4 months ago. And General Brito and I were talking to the PCC class. So, you know, there's 300 06 colonels, 05 lieutenant colonels, and a bunch of CSMs, you know, sitting in sergeant major, sitting out there ready to get in the job. And I was sitting on the stage, and I just had this thought. And so here, this is the first time I'll put it out this wide cast. They said, well, sergeant major, you know, what do we need to know? Kind of similar question. And I said, hey, sir, you're about to go into battalion command. Here's what I'm telling you, what I think you should know, which is going to make your life super easy. You already know you need to be the tactical expert. You know you need to be all these things. I said, today's generation works off phones. What do they have on their phones? He said, well, they have apps. I said, that's right. So if you're approachable, you're present, and you're positive in your soldier's life, you can't go wrong. I said, if you do those three things as a leader, you will lead that formation to hell and back. And they're going to follow you and trust you because they know that you're there for them. And so I said, be the soldier. And it sounds corny as all get out, you know, but it's three simple principles that anybody could do anytime that I think soldiers would truly value to say, well, anytime I needed my NCO, I could go to him. Well, my NCO is always at PT formation and in the field with me, and they're doing the work with me. Man, my NCO is always positive every day. Why would I be upset? Like, I can always get through everything now. If you could do those things, just think about the climate and the culture you breed in that organization right off the bat. And then when you ask them to do the hard stuff will come easy. And they're going to trust in your decision of why you're making them go do those hard things. So I don't know. I would kind of leave it at that and say that's maybe something just to think about. But, you know, it's a journey. It's a journey too.
I was wondering, what's Sergeant Major Harris's recommendation for, you know, as soldiers or NCOs, we kind of know, like, the institutional domain, like, that stuff's kind of laid out for us. We kind of know what to expect with that. But for self-development, it might be confusing. Yeah. You know, maybe people don't know what they should focus on. So does Sergeant Major Harris have a recommendation for an E5, E6, E7 to self-develop? What does that look like?
Yeah, that's a great point. And So I think it could come in multiple ways, right? I think the easiest way to say it is that if I know that I'm a Sergeant E5, and I'll just go off my original background being an infantryman, and I am a rifle team leader, and I know that I'm about to go out and do – we're about to do squad live fires. My self-developmental domain – in the self-developmental domain, I should go back into my RTEPs and into my manuals and make sure that I am super fresh in what I'm being asked to do, whether it was a team leader or squad leader. So part of the self-development goes in line with both the institutional and operational. So it's not necessarily alone by itself, right? It works with the other two, because even if you go to school, you still have to do some self-development in the evening, like because you have to take the actual action to study, right? If you don't do it, you ain't going to study. But you have to take the actual action to study to make sure you pass the course that you're in. And you should want to do it because you want to be the best. You want to get the commandant's list. You want to get the leadership award. You want to do those things. And so self-development isn't just synonymous by itself. I think it's really congruent with the other two. But self-development also needs to be coached by your mentor or somebody you believe in to say, listen, here's a gap in your swing. And I could say, Harris, gap in your swing is this. Here's some things to think about. You know, why don't you do some research and figure these things out, right? Because some of you just may not know that it's a gap in your swing just because nobody's ever told you and you're moving on with what you got to do, right? Yeah. So sometimes your coach, your mentor, whatever you want to call it, your leader in your counselings needs to say, hey, here's the thing. I need you to work on this. And when they say work on that, that means self-develop in my brain housing group, right? Because they're saying, I want you to work on this. I could give you the answer. I do the same thing with my kids. So self-development is, I'm not going to give you the answer. And used to make my kids mad all the time. Now my kids automatically know. Like my kids would come to me with like, because I used, all right, this may be a little sadistic, but I used to make them do. I said, you will come to me with like a 5-page PowerPoint presentation of why you want a skateboard, right? Why by me buying you a skateboard outweighs the benefits of something, right? You know, it's silly stuff. But the point behind my wife and I doing that was, hey, I'm not going to give you the answer. Two, you're going to learn. You're going to learn how to research. You're going to learn how to express the why you want something. Is it a need, right? Is it a want? Is it a desire? And then I'm going to make you fight for it, right? We all knew we were going to get it anyway for him, right? That was never the question. We were going to buy it. Probably already bought it anyway, and it was like hidden in the closet under the bed somewhere. But the point was making adults. And so we wanted our kids to be able to think for themselves and do those things. And so, you know, a good coach and mentor will do that too, especially when you go through your counselings and say, hey, there might be a gap in your swing. Here's what I want you to work on. And next time we come together, let's talk about this and do this. Or I'm going to, you know, kind of assess you over the time and how it goes. So.
All right. So we're kind of on the end of this, Sergeant Major. So I wanted to focus on some advice that you would offer. I know you kind of have already, but, you know, to both new and experienced NCOs, can you share a Sergeant Major Harris experience that you still reflect on today that helps you in your current role?
Yeah, there's I'm sure there's probably a couple. There's one that always sticks in my mind, and it really over the past two jobs, being the fifth Corps Sergeant Major now in TRADOC, it's probably weighed a little bit more heavily on me. And not heavily in a bad way, just made me think about how I approach different things. When I was – I think it was probably – maybe it was a battalion Sergeant Major. I was out in Hawaii, 121 Infantry, Gimlets, go Gimlets. I generally think I have a pretty large capacity to understand and do things. Mm-hmm. You know, there's studies out there that says nobody can ever multitask. You just simultaneously do things, right? There's no such animal as multitasking. I think I'm pretty good at that, whatever that's called. I can do it pretty well and have a pretty good capacity of holding things in my head. And I was moving out, and I had and it was great because it was one of my first sergeants came to me, and he was like, Sergeant Major. He's like, I got to talk to you. I'm like, come on in, man. What's going on? He's like, you got to stop. And I'm like, whoa, threw me back for a second, right? Because I didn't know that's how that conversation was going. I'm like, well, what do you mean? He's like, you got to slow down. He's like, you were moving way too fast. And I'm like, well, what are you talking about? I said, we got this to that. He's like, exactly. He said, we can't all do that. He's like, you know, I got these new kids coming in. We're trying to do this. We're trying to get through this training exercise. We're doing these things and this. And, you know, everything was just compounding. And so I had to stop and think about it. And I was like, yeah, okay, I got you. I appreciate that. Thanks for that advice. And, you know, we had finished conversation. Everything was always cordial. I always tell my people to be candid with me. Like, I'm not that person that's going to say, don't tell me the truth. Be candid. We can have an adult conversation. Part of being in the Army and being a soldier, you've got to be an adult. So I always had adult conversations with all of my leaders and subordinates. And so, you know, he left, and I went to my boss at the time, my battalion commander, and I said, sir, I just had this conversation. I said, but I think I know what he's talking about, but I don't know if I can wrap my head around it right now. So I told him what happened. He goes, hey, Sergeant Major, here's an analogy for you. He said, how fast do you run? I said, well, at the time, I think I was running like 1350, 2 miles. And he was like, okay, that's pretty fast. He's like, what's the battalion average on a 2 mile run for the APFT? I'm like, God, it's like 16 and change. He's like, what about that company? I was like, I don't know. I'll go look, but probably similar. He's like, exactly. You're outpacing your organization right now. Slow down. It'll be okay. Like, they'll catch up. And so kind of what the thing I talked about before is being able to recognize that and not to bring yourself down or your level of proficiency or the way you execute things down, but you got to get everybody up. And so you got to be able to slow down a little bit to bring the rest of everybody up with you to get things. It's not putting myself on a pedestal or anything. I was just moving out. I was given a task and I was, you know, boom, boom. I was crushed. It was my first battalion CSM job. So I was going after it. Like, we were going to be excellent. And it was a great realization for me to say, you know what? One, not everything's a priority. And two, you got to slow down and help your organization identify what the actual priorities are so they're not going, you know, in 25 different directions all at the same speed at a million miles an hour trying to get something done. And that's where we find ourselves, and I find myself in the leadership positions, is that senior NCOs, really any leader, has to be that honest broker to say, listen, okay, we got to slow down. Let's prioritize these efforts so we can get after them so they're meaningful. It's not just doing them to do them. Like, they got to have an outcome that, you know, that's positive for it. And so that's one thing I always go to, because trust me, I have lots of great ideas. Like, I mean, I've been doing this again. Just my experience alone is giving these, not just because some wazoo ideas that Sergeant Major Harris wants to do, but it's because of things that I've seen over my decades of being in the military, how we can affect small changes to have big impact. Mm-hmm. And again, I have a team that works with me that says, hey, Sergeant Major, I hear you, but can we save and hold off on that for 3 months? And I'll say, okay, well, why? They tell me, and I'm like, roger that. We'll hold on to that till October, because I got, you know, along with probably the 8 initiatives I'm working on now, come October, I have about 3 more already in the queue to go. But I got to make sure that my team is ready to execute those and actually do them before we start them. Because, again, nothing is going to stop anything that we're doing. They're all just enhancing what we're doing to make it maybe hopefully a little bit better for, you know, the next 10 to 15 years. So that was one thing that I always think about. Not to mention my wife, she has these things, these good idea fairy pins, and I earned the very first one. And one of my commanders earned another one, so I'm glad that I wasn't the only one that got it. And so we've handed out 4 good idea fairy pins so far. So it's a good joke for my wife and I, and the people I work with, they get a kick out of it. So it's all good. It's all meant out of good fun. Again, if you can't have fun with your job, boy, why do it? I'm just saying. I mean, you got to love what you're doing every day. I love what I'm doing every day. And we just got to have fun. Can't take things personal. It's a job. It is what it is, right? We commit to it. We execute it. And you got to keep your team fun. I don't know how else to say it.
Sergeant Major Harris, this is the final question. We ask all of our guests on the Sergeant Time Podcast this question, and we get various answers. But what advice would present-day you, Command Sergeant Major Harris, give to newly promoted Sergeant Harris back in the day?
I'll tell you, it'd probably be this. We already said it once. It'll be all right.
Yep.
It'll buff out. It's going to happen.
It'll buff out.
It's going to happen. I got to give that to Staff Sergeant Straub. She's the one that says that all the time. It'll buff out. But it will. Because you said it earlier too, sir, is that, you know what? You could harp and always think on those bad things that's going to happen. And you know, but why? Right? It'll be okay. Again, they're roadblocks. They're challenges. You stumble a little bit. But that's why we learn. That's why it's called experience. You can't have an experience if you don't fail at something. Other than that, you're just cruising through life and doing something. You got to fail at something to learn, and at least to get it to stick, right? Because that becomes an emotional event. And emotional events tend to stick with us a lot more than others. But how you perceive and look at that emotional event could really determine, I don't know, outcomes in the future of how you are, how you act as a leader potentially, or how you continually approach challenges. And so, again, just say, listen, hey, I tried my best. And I know I tried my best, but it'll be okay. But you can't be apathetic about it either, right? Let me put that in there too. You cannot be apathetic about it. You still have to keep it as in somewhat emotional to you because you're taking ownership of it. It's kind of a pride thing, but you can't let it overcome you, and it'll be okay. It'll buff out.
Well, thank you, Sergeant Major. Thanks, Sergeant Major. Stay tuned for more interesting guests and inspiring conversations right here at the NCO Journal. submit your articles, get published. Don't forget to visit our webpage and follow us on social media. We'll see you next time on the Sergeant's Time Podcast.